Bill O'Reilly here with a big announcement. You can now watch new episodes of the No Spin News live on Samsung TV Plus. Tune in each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV for breaking news, honest analysis, and the best election coverage in America. Please join me, Bill O'Reilly, at the First TV, now available on Samsung TV Plus. Start watching today on your Samsung television, Galaxy devices, or the Samsung TV Plus mobile app. Check out the No Spin News each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV, Samsung TV Plus. Remember the old adage, honesty is the best policy? Well, that's gone, not only in America, but all over the world, especially if politics or money is involved. So we're going to prove that. We're going to prove that deceit is ruling in the political arena in the USA. And, you know, money is taken for granted. And I'll get to that some other time when there's a big financial story in play. But today, the Talking Points memo deals with the presidential election and how honest reporting is vanishing right before our eyes. So we begin on Saturday, March 16th. All right, Donald Trump, Dayton, Ohio. He gives a rally. He speaks for more than 90 minutes. Now, when you speak that long, that's not a written speech. He's riffing. And whenever Donald Trump riffs, trouble follows. It's, you know, it's very similar. Trump knows what he's saying, but he gets carried away because the MAGA people are in the crowd. And it's like a, I said, a heavy metal concert. Biden doesn't know what he's saying. So when he goes and starts to riff, it gets crazy. But in both cases, it brings grief to both candidates. So the first manufactured controversy has to do with Trump telling the crowd that automobiles are now being heavily manufactured in both China and Mexico, and that is hurting the American vehicle industry. Roll the tape.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars.
Okay, so bloodbath, economic bloodbath for the country. All right, that's the context of the remark. If you cared to know about the context, which the hate Trumpers don't. And we all know that. But it gets really egregious. So Nancy Pelosi didn't see the speech. I can guarantee you she didn't see the speech. But he told her something. So she goes on CNN. Roll it.
We just have to win this election because he's even predicting a bloodbath. What does that mean? He's going to exact a bloodbath? There's something wrong here. How respectful I am of the American people and their goodness. But how much more do they have to see from him to understand that this isn't what our country is about? Praising Hitler, praising the Russians.
Okay, praising Hitler? You know, but Pelosi makes no attempt, all right, to know anything. And she's a propagandist. Now, you can make an argument, and there's some validity to it, that the right and the Republican parties do this as well. But I'm going to tell you something. If they distort a Biden speech like they just distorted a Trump speech, I will report it to you. I know there are propagandists on both sides, but now this is an industry. The hate Trump movement is an industry, and it is enabled by the networks. So here are the press outlets that took the bloodbath comment out of context. Okay, Mediaite, the Associated Press, Drudge, CNBC, NPR, The Guardian, NBC News, Politico, CNN, The Hill, The Daily Beast, The Economic Times, CBS News, USA Today, LA Times, New York Times, Newsweek, Rolling Stone, Telegraph, Independent, USA Today, MSNBC, Washington Post. They all took the bloodbath headline and took it out of context to tell the American public, hey, Trump is threatening violence. That's what they did. Okay? So, I mean, it's beyond dishonesty. That wasn't all. All right, same speech, Dayton, Ohio. Trump addresses illegal migrants who commit heinous crimes, not only in America when they get here, but in their home countries. Roll it.
If I had prisons that were teeming with MS-13 and all sorts of people that they've got to take care of for the next 50 years, right? Young people, they're in jail for years. And if you call them people, I don't know if you call them people. In some cases, they're not people, in my opinion. But I'm not allowed to say that because the radical left says that's a terrible thing to say. They say you have to vote against him because did you hear what he said about humanity? I've seen the humanity, and these humanity, these are bad. These are animals, okay?
All right. So I kind of agree with that. MSN 13, the El Salvadoran gang, is heavily here on Long Island, committing murder, mayhem, drug dealing, you name it, extortion. In their own country, El Salvador, the president there has had to declare martial law and suspend all due process to attack those gangs. These are really like the Mexican drug cartels. So Trump uses hyperbole, but it's not inaccurate. All right. Former Biden spokesperson Jen Psaki now works for MSNBC. Go.
The full context is that he went on to say some undocumented immigrants are, quote, not people. And of course, the full context is that this is much bigger than one single speech.
Well, if you're expecting any kind of honesty from that woman, then what can I say? You're not going to get it. She's a propagandist, just like Pelosi. But, you know, it just rankles me that NBC News and CNN enable this kind of blatant dishonesty. Here are the media outlets that condemn Trump for condemning violent migrants. NPR, The Guardian, The Atlantic, Rolling Stone, Politico, CNN, The Hill, The Daily Beast, The New York Times, USA Today, MSNBC, The Washington Post, The Huffington Post. You sense a pattern in behavior here? Jeez. All right. The good news is that most Americans know the fix is in. They know. So if you are watching MSNBC or CNN or reading The Washington Post and The New York Times, you already hate Trump. You want to hate him more? Just watch those vehicles. Now, I'm not in business to stick up for Trump. It's not what this Talking Points memo is all about. This is to just demonstrate once again the blatant dishonesty of the media in America, a media that has special protections under the Constitution. It's supposed to be delivering honest information to you so you can make informed judgments and decisions. That's gone, vanished. That's why you're here listening and watching me this evening. All right, once again, if Biden gets attacked that way by the right or the Republicans or whatever, I'm on it. And that's a memo. Bill O'Reilly here with a big announcement. You can now watch new episodes of the No Spin News live on Samsung TV Plus. Tune in each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV for breaking news, honest analysis, and the best election coverage in America. Please join me, Bill O'Reilly, at the First TV, now available on Samsung TV Plus. Start watching today on your Samsung television, Galaxy devices, or the Samsung TV Plus mobile app. Check out the No Spin News each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV, Samsung TV Plus. The Biden campaign has amassed $155 million in campaign donations directly and through their political action committees. Trump campaign is $40 million. Now, that'll change. A lot of the money that were donated to the Trump Political Action Committees went to pay Trump's lawyers. It's about $100 million that Trump's going to have to pay lawyers to defend him. And you can use Political Action Committee money to pay that. And that's what he's doing at this point. But I think at the end of the campaign in 8 months, the donations will be about even. Now, it's the progressive left that's really funneling the big money into Biden, because they know if Trump wins, the progressive movement is done, at least for 4 years, finished. And they have their guy. Okay, Biden does whatever the progressive movement wants him to do. They have him, and they want to keep him. They don't care how old he is. He could be dead. Okay, Weekend at Bernie's. Now, one of the key witnesses in this trial will be the former Defense Department Chief of Staff, Kash Patel. We have had him on the program before. He joins us now from Palm Beach, Florida. So just to bring everybody up to date, you were involved before, during, and after January 6th, directly involved, correct?
Yes, sir. I was in the Oval Office with the president days before, and I was involved on January 6th and after because I was the chief of staff for the Department of Defense.
All right. When the Trump lawyers call you, let me ask this question first. Has Jack Smith or anybody from the Justice Department contacted you?
Oh, yeah. I've been subpoenaed. I've appeared before their grand jury multiple times, and okay. I've got no problem with it because
All right.
I just told
you. You have appeared before the grand jury and told your side of the story, correct?
Yes, sir.
When you are testifying, and you will be one of the main witnesses in the Trump conspiracy trial, what is the headline? What are you going to tell the jurors?
The truth. It's simple. Days before January 6th, I was a percipient witness firsthand in the Oval Office with the President of the United States, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Secretary of Defense, and the Chief of Staff to the President of the United States. And days before, Donald Trump authorized 10,000+ National Guardsmen and women. And Mr. O'Reilly, just think of it this way. How is it factually and legally possible for Nancy Pelosi, the Capitol Police, and Mayor Bowser to reject that National Guard authorization if Donald Trump didn't authorize it? We have
okay,
the written...
Let's stop for a minute. Is there paper that shows the president authorized the National Guard before January 6th? Is there any paper that you can produce?
Well, I can't because I'm not a DOD anymore, but there's memorandums mobilizing segments of the National Guard.
Oh, so there are memorandums before January 6th. That's going to be a very powerful piece of evidence. Now, Smith and the Justice Department say you, Kash Patel, are not credible. You're in the pocket of Trump. You know they're saying that, right?
Yep.
And you reply?
Very simply. Put aside my testimony, put aside what I just told you about legal and factual impossibility, and move on to the January 6th committee, which I've also was subpoenaed by the first person, by the way, and testified truthfully there as well. And what do we just learn? That 2 years ago, a career Secret Service officer, Antonio Renato, who is an apolitical officer assigned to presidential protection, testified to the January 6th committee that the 10,000+ National Guard authorization before January 6th was in fact true and happened, and he responded to that authorization internally in the White House. Why did Liz Cheney and the January 6th committee bury that exoneration, that piece of evidence that destroys the insurrection narrative? That's the question that people are asking now, and now the mainstream media and everybody else is pivoting. They're saying the logic doesn't make sense. Donald Trump's guilty of insurrection because he did not order the domestic deployment of the United States military? They've completely lost the logic, law, and facts.
By law, he had to get the permission of the mayor of D.C.,
yes.
Bowser, who said publicly she turned him down. Pelosi denies even knowing about the request. Do you think you have evidence to prove that Pelosi is lying?
Look, we sent the Secretary of the Army immediately after that authorization, days before, to the Capitol Police, who respond and work for Nancy Pelosi. Again, don't believe me. That conversation happened. The Capitol
Police.
Well,
is it a conversation or is it an in-writing request?
To the Capitol Police or the refusal?
To the Capitol Police?
We sent the Secretary of the Army immediately in person. Whether he sent a memorandum after that, we'll have to check
okay.
the Department.
All right. So the Secretary of the Army is going to have to testify to that. But Pelosi is saying, well, somebody told me, but be that as it may.
There's one thing on the Capitol Police. They published their own memorandum reciting the sequence of events before and on January 6th. And in their own memorandum, they rejected in writing the authorization of the National Guard.
Okay,
but
they don't mention Pelosi in it. I know about that, madam. Now, get back to your Liz Cheney question. Clearly, Liz Cheney didn't want a fair hearing on the January 6th committee. That's clear. She wanted to condemn Donald Trump, and she knew her media allies would print everything she said, and anything that was exculpatory would be ignored. So Liz Cheney had no, you know, she had cover to do this dishonest thing, which she did, in my opinion. She did, however, mention your testimony way, way down in the transcript, correct?
I think they cited it, but they also precluded the evidentiary documents I'm talking to you about. Even though they had an agreement to incorporate that into the final report, they excluded Mayor Bowser's.
Yeah, they didn't
written,
put him in. Okay.
They excluded the documents from the Capitol Police.
Now, you wrote a book last September, came out the same time Killing Witches came out, my book, called Government Gangsters, The Deep State, The Truth, and the Battle for Our Democracy. So I want to alert people that everything that you're telling me today is in the book. All right. You say that it's pretty much organized crime running the country from Washington. Is that an overstatement by you?
Look, again, it's the same MO from Russiagate, which I exposed and talk about in the book as a chief investigator. Instead of the executive branch withholding evidence of innocence, now we have the legislative branch performing the same operation in Liz Cheney and the Jan 6 committee. And we put the receipts in that book, which is why the Joe Biden administration wormholed it for 10 months and blocked its release. There's got to be a reason I had to take him to federal court to sue. So again, you can believe me, but the truth is in their own written word. And that's the most powerful evidence. And we got
it. Well, I do believe you. if I didn't, I would be tearing your throat out right now. I do. But I'm not sure that a jury in Washington, D.C., will examine the evidence in a fair way. I would be surprised if they did. It looks to me like the fix is in on this one from the beginning until the trial. Last word.
I think you're absolutely right. Look, I used to be a national security prosecutor at the Department of Justice, and this is the definition of forum shopping. They could have moved this case to Kansas, Kentucky, even Connecticut, for crying out loud. But they knew they would have the best judges for the radical left agenda to advance this disinformation campaign of insurrection in Washington, D.C. And so they put it right there. It's ironic that the Department of Justice is railroading a two-tier system of justice through Washington. But Donald Trump, I believe, is exposing that corruption every day.
Well, we'll see. Do you ever talk to Trump, by the way?
Frequently. I'm his senior advisor, so we have some conversations.
If you're the senior advisor, that would mean you would talk to him. All right, yeah. Cash, we really appreciate your time. Thanks very much for your work, and we'll have you back, I hope. Thanks again.
Thank you, sir.
All right, here's an interesting media story. Again, I'm obsessed with the media, and I hope it's not boring you. Don Lemon, who I know a little bit, I ran into him a couple of times, but I don't know really who he is, and Elon Musk, who I ran in one time. All right, so Elon Musk is the head of X. He hires Don Lemon, who left CNN, and it looks like they're going to be buddies, but they're not. And here's why. This is a fascinating story to me. So on January 8th, 2024, Elon Musk tweeted, quote, "The airline industry can't find enough qualified pilots even without insane DEI requirements." So Musk is against the forced hiring of people based on skin color. 2 days later, he tweets this, quote, "Do you want to fly in an airplane where they prioritize DEI hiring over your safety? that is actually happening. So Musk's opinion is that DEI drops standards from a meritocracy where pilots would be judged upon their flight hours, their safety records, and what they did on the job. Remember, you got to have a lot of flight hours to become a commercial airline pilot. He says he believes, Elon Musk believes, that if you add skin color preference, you're putting people at risk. That's his belief. Okay, you can take it or leave it. Lemon interviews Musk, a major mistake for Lemon and Musk, and picks up on the DEI stuff. Lemon apparently believes that if you don't support diversity, equity, inclusion, that you're a racist or a misogynist. That's what Lemon believes. Roll the tape.
Okay, but do you understand how by saying just that standards are being lowered, that you're implying that they're being lowered because people are less skilled and less intelligent, and you're talking about people of color and or women?
I'm saying we should not lower standards.
But do you don't?
That's it.
I think everyone can agree that you shouldn't lower standards.
Great.
But you're implying that they're lowering standards because of people of color or women, because someone is not a white male. You're saying that they're less skilled and less intelligent.
That's not what he's saying. That's what Lemon wants to believe he's saying. But that's not what Musk said. Musk wants a meritocracy where the most skilled people are hired in a life-death situation. It's a pilot. I'm agreeing with Musk, and I bet you do too. I bet you do too. It doesn't have anything to do if the African-American pilot is the best candidate, you hire him like that. I had a pilot when I went down to Florida who's a woman. Great, fabulous, okay? But you don't factor the hiring of a airline pilot in based on skin color. It's how good are you? How is your record? So Musk was faced with a guy who's trying to tell him he's a racist and a misogynist. If I ran X, I would have fired Lemon too. That's disrespectful. And you can't interview on your idea of an implication. I get letters once in a while and I read them to you. Oh, O'Reilly, you're implying. I never imply. Ever. I tell you. Joining us now is a man who may know. His name is Kurt Mills. He's the executive director of the American Conservative, coming to us from Washington, D.C. All of the people on this list are conservative. Assume it has something to do with Ukraine, but I don't know. Do you know why they voted against it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was potentially a bit of a throwaway resolution, and it is possible that some of the members overlooked the details here. But I do think it shows more than anything the sort of headwinds that Speaker Johnson is facing in trying to get new Ukrainian funding here. The level of skepticism of the narrative around the Ukraine-Russia war, at least among the Republican rank and file, and this is aided and abetted, frankly, by the presumptive Republican nominee, is so dramatic at this point that they doubt things like fatality totals or narratives around alleged Russian kidnapping.
Okay, but no sane person could doubt that the Russians have committed atrocities and war crimes in Ukraine. The evidence is overwhelming they have. Why do you think if these people are proud of their stance not to fund Ukraine, why wouldn't they answer and explain?
I think they would just submit that it feeds into the narrative that puts us on this hawkish doom loop. I think it's a fair critique that they should have answered your criticisms, or at least answered your inquiry. And I think that you're at a point where the muscle memory is that, you know, they have certain members of Congress who are just automatically voting no on anything that is seen
and that's
as furthering
not a good
this
thing.
War.
If you were in the House, you wouldn't have voted no on this. I know you wouldn't have.
I'm not an elected member of Congress, but no, I don't see the point. And indeed, there were members of Congress, such as Congressman Gates, who either I don't know if he voted yes or he was not part of your list.
Yeah,
and so I don't. Yeah,
Andy yeah. Biggs.
Matt Gates, I meant. Yeah, Matt Gates, I meant of Florida.
Oh, Gates? No, he didn't. He didn't. Look.
Yeah, my point was that essentially there are Ukraine skeptical members of Congress who did not vote for this, and that seems to be most prudent.
Yeah, people should be skeptical of Ukraine, but the Republican Party and conservative movement is divided on the issue.
Yeah.
And you know, historically, conservatives have supported blunting totalitarians like Putin. Historically, if you go all the way back to World War I, the isolationist movement in the conservative community has always been less than the isolationist movement in the liberal community. Always. All throughout history. But now it's emerging in 2024 that the isolationist movement is more prominent in conservatives' circles than liberal. And that's a change, a big change.
Well, I don't want to debate the essential nature of the fact set there, but I do think I don't really like the term isolationist myself. I think there have been skeptical voices throughout the last 100 years of American foreign policy that have transcended partisan alliances on both sides. And so, I mean, there was conservative opposition to World War I and even World War II up until Pearl Harbor, effectively. And so this is, in some senses, a recrudescence or a restoration of the old party of the 1920s.
Okay. So we got to deal with reality here. And the Democratic Party is united. They vote en masse and block, no dissenters. We've explained why on this broadcast that if you are a Democrat in the House and you go against what the Democrats want, they cut off your money. That's Nancy Pelosi, did it for years. So whatever Biden wants, the Democrats are going to vote for it almost 100% down the line. Republicans are not like that. They have different factions, and they're not united. How big an advantage is that, in your opinion, for the Democrats?
Well, I think it's a healthier political party when the dialogue is in essentially North Korean, like you described. I do think there is some advantage for the Democrats, maybe in the short to medium term. But let's say if the Ukraine war actually becomes quite unpopular as the year goes round. I mean, I think this is quite similar to 2004 in some ways, in which you have a war that does have some bipartisan support, but is clearly championed by a partisan White House. And if it gets pretty bad in September, October, November, this could become a net liability for Biden. And, okay. And the fact that they don't have an open dialogue about it means that they actually can't course correct as quickly.
But right now, all the polls show that most American voters support blunting Putin. This isn't about Ukraine. This is about Putin and letting Putin win. And Putin is relying upon the fractious nature of our democratic government to wear us down. That's obviously his strategy. And he believes that he will. And then he'll march into whatever he wants in Ukraine. Moldova will be next, or Lithuania, or, you know, whoever. Putin's not going to stop. And then China will be emboldened to go into Taiwan. That theory, and it is a theory, is pretty well borne out by history. I mean, and the sort of question is, does the United States want to leave the defense of Ukraine at this point? I mean, I would vote for continuing to give military arms to Ukraine. That's what I would vote for. Not forever. You'd have to see progress on the battlefield. But at this point, if you let Putin win, it's going to cost us much, much more money down the road.
My own personal view is I think we needed an armistice yesterday. I mean, Crimea has effectively been under de facto Russian control for 10 years. It looks like Russia is going to successfully annex these territories, the risks of Russia actually going into further territories like Odessa, which they are increasingly attacking, I think is something that the Biden administration needs to take very seriously. I think everybody should cut their losses here and call it a day. In terms of prioritization, I mean, look, I think you have to look at why candidates like Trump, Biden, and Obama, who have all urged for the U.S. to be less engaged in the world, more or less, over the last 15 years, have been the successful winners at the ballot box, which is that Americans look around at their relatively deteriorating neighborhoods, at their home states, and don't see why we should pick winners and losers in every theater in the world. I take your point that Russia is very important, but if that logic held absolutely, I mean, should the U.S., we apparently got the boot this week from Niger, should we really be contesting the Russians in Niger? Where do we draw the line?
Well, you draw the line on countries that don't matter, like Niger. But Taiwan matters. The chip industry there alone would cripple the United States for at least a year if the Chinese went in and took it over. TikTok aside, I mean, that's way more important. So I think you don't take the risk. You don't embolden the totalitarians. You fight them as much as you can without being ridiculous. The deterioration of American neighborhoods is because of corruption in the state and local governments, not the federal government. So anyway, that's where I stand on it, and I think I'm right. Final question. Donald Trump's not a conservative. You know that. And if you don't, read my book, The United States of Trump. He's never been a conservative. He couldn't even tell you what the conservative philosophy is. He's a deal maker. But his supporters are largely right and ultra right. They love him. Does it bother you as the director of the American Conservative that Trump really isn't conservative?
Do you think he's not nationalist or populist or center-right, though?
No, I think he's populist. I think he's center-right for practical reasons. Best thing that Trump did in his 4 years outside of running the economy efficiently was the appointments to the Supreme Court. If Hillary Clinton had won the election, she would have loaded it up with liberal judges. And you think it's bad now in the neighborhoods? What's happening to New York City right as we speak, because I'm here, would be happening all over the country if Hillary Clinton had won and appointed those Supreme Court justices. But Trump didn't. He appointed traditional right-leaning judges, and they're saving the country right now. But as a doctrinaire, Trump couldn't care less about conservative thought.
I think it's a fair point. I do think he is instinctually conservative, though. And I always think the Trump years have to be juxtaposed with the years that he succeeded in the conservative movement, which was the Bush years. And I think Trump looks at the open borders, free trade, sort of imperial foreign policy, and he sees that as an approach that does not preserve the way of life that he came up in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even early 90s.
Do you think that deep, huh? Because Trump despises the Bush family, the Romneys of the world, the McCains of the world, the so-called moderate Republicans. But they're all conservative. Bush, Romney, McCain, they're all conservative. Trump has no use for them at all. None.
Agreed. I mean, I do think the thought goes deep enough. If you go back to when he was originally flirting with running for president in 1987 or 1988, he appears on Oprah Winfrey's show, and he was just saying the exact same thing then. And that was juxtaposed with the Reagan administration. The jobs were going overseas, were getting ripped off in trade. He was worrying about Japan, not China then. I do think there's more ideological consistency there than he gets credit for.
All right. We appreciate a good discussion, Kurt. Thanks for helping us out. And we'll talk again, I hope. All right, American credit card fees, that's the vigorish, the interest they charge you and other fees, surged 50% since Biden became president. Why? Gas prices are up 48%. Most people buy gas on a credit. Grocery stores up 23%. I mean, it's incredible numbers here. Again, you buy gas, you're paying 48% more than when Trump. You buy groceries, you're paying 23% in the grocery store, in a restaurant, more than Trump. Okay, people use their credit cards, I don't see. So boom, boom, boom. And their salaries have not gone up, at least that close to that level. So 50% more credit card expenses. Last year, Americans paid $157 billion in interest to the credit card companies. $157 billion. Okay? Americans charged $1.13 trillion as of the final quarter of 13. So it'll be more than that. And people are getting hammered. They can't pay. So there are forfeitures on a car. There are this. Okay? And most people say 80% cited the higher prices as why they're in trouble with their credit cards. Now, with that fact, you would think Biden would lose by a landslide, just like Jimmy Carter lost. But remember, when Carter was running against Reagan in 1980, and this is another thing we have in confronting the presidents, it was tight 8 months before the vote, even though Carter was failing miserably in what he was doing in the Oval Office. The polls were tight. It wasn't like Reagan surged and was way ahead. He wasn't. It got after the debates, and again, we'll take you all through that campaign in the book, then it started to widen for Reagan. But with these numbers here, Biden should be way behind Trump. Smart life. So very frustrating, go to the airlines. You know it. I know it. You're on hold for 3 days. They lose your bags. Nobody knows and nobody cares, whatever it may be. And you can't even get a seat. A friend of mine flew down to Florida, came back from Panama City late at night, packed Delta flight. So smart life. There are places that you can track how much to pay. Google Flights or Hopper, H-O-P-P-R. I've never been on either of them. Google Flights or Hopper. Monitor costs. Kayak, K-A-Y-A-K, and Expedia also tell you how much it's going to cost. But the key is when you book. So international travel, you have to book at least 2 months ahead. At least. Now, you can get a ticket before that, but you can pay more, right? If you book out, but then you have to look at the cancellation policies. And if, because things happen, you might have to buy trip insurance, whatever, complicated. But if you're going abroad, 2 months, if you haven't booked it, you're going to pay more. Here, summer flights should be booked 6 months in advance. That means January. And we're in March now, end of March. So if you haven't booked your summer flights, you can pay more. Because what the airline companies do is they look at the seat chart, and if the flight is, you know, almost full, they're going to charge you top dollar. If there's not a lot of people going, the price will come down. That's why these websites are valuable. So you got to plan ahead. And if you're flying over Christmas next year or Thanksgiving, you got to book now. Now. Smart life. Ice cream. So this is good news. We told you yesterday that Unilever dumping Ben and Jerry's because Ben and Jerry's communists. They're communists. Even though they're as wealthy as you could possibly be up there in Vermont, you know, they're still way, way, way out there. Bernie Sanders and Ben and Jerry are buds. So in 1986, Americans ate 18 pounds a year of ice cream. A lot of ice cream, okay, 1986. Today, 12 pounds per person. This is the average ice cream. And the reason is all the diabetes and pre-diabetes and blood sugar and all of that, boom, and it's going to hurt you. So more and more people are hearing this from their physicians. You've cut down the ice cream. So the ice cream industry is going, whoop, and will continue. And they can't make a substitute. So if you eat the ice cream that's not really ice cream, it's like, ew. But worse than the ice cream are the sugar drinks. So if you cut down the ice cream, I have 2 quarts of Häagen-Dazs in my refrigerator. And Häagen-Dazs is the best ice cream, in my opinion. I have not touched those quarts since Christmas. I discipline myself So I'm not going to eat them. I will eat them. Someday I'll have a craving for agendas and I'll go in and I'll eat them. But every day I don't eat them is a better day for my body. The sugar drinks, though, are really killing Americans. So, and I hope they start to come down. I mean, I really do. It's horrible. Here is the final thought of the day. So I got tons of mail going. It's hopeless. If Biden wins in November, we're all going to move to Costa Rica, whatever it may be. Okay. So I'm not an optimist so much as a realist. And when you read Confronting the Presidents, you'll see that we have had some very hard times in America. We have low, terrible leaders, population at each other's throats. This isn't new. But we've always emerged, all right, as the noble nation we set out to be, always. And, you know, when you start in 1776 and it's now 2024, that's a pretty good track record. All right. We don't have any violent revolutions here. We don't have any of this. Assassinations. Yeah. But I know that this country is never going to go down a drain. Now, I can't say that about my state, New York. I can't, because that's tottering right now. And if it goes any further left, the state will collapse. But the good people are going to try to get out if they can economically. But the federal government, it's bad now. It's corrupt all over the place. It needs a reformer. It needs somebody to come in. It needs a Ronald Reagan, some charismatic person who can rally most of the folks. You know, I think it'll happen. Not going to happen like that, but I think it will. And believe me, I know more about the history of this country than most people know. 13 killing books. All right. One of them was outside the country, Jesus, which, by the way, if you haven't read it, I got a letter. How can I see the movie? It's on pay-per-view. Just put, well, you know, it was Google Killing Jesus, the movie, and boom, there it is. And you press a button and you got it. Can't be any easier. But with Easter coming up, Holy Week next week, I mean, you might want to zero in on that. And it's not boring and it's not religious. So you want to learn about it. But anyway, I know a lot about history. And when you read Confronting the Presidents, you're going to compliment me. Because Dugard and I, Martin Dugard, the co-author, I mean, we just write down, boom, no ideology at all. None. Republican and Democratic presidents are treated the same. The good, the bad, and the ugly. All right? I couldn't get Clint Eastwood in the book, but the overarch is that. Thank you for watching the No Spin News, and we'll see you again on Monday. Bill O'Reilly here with a big announcement. You can now watch new episodes of the No Spin News live on Samsung TV Plus. Tune in each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV for breaking news, honest analysis, and the best election coverage in America. Please join me, Bill O'Reilly, at the First TV, now available on Samsung TV Plus. Start watching today on your Samsung television, Galaxy devices, or the Samsung TV Plus mobile app. Check out the No Spin News each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV, Samsung TV Plus.